Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us on this Friday. In this hour, we're talking about issues facing veterans and what can be done locally to help meet their needs. Brian Erickson is the Veterans Service Officer for Douglas County. He sat down with me recently to talk about his work to connect vets with services and some of the challenges facing them.
Basically, our office is here to support veterans within Douglas County obtain their federal and state benefits that they are entitled to receive. In addition to that, we also try to serve the veterans on any other needs that they may have beyond that goes beyond their actual federal and state benefits that they have.
Okay. And those federal and state benefits, are those related mostly to health care or retirement or just runs the gamut?
It just runs the gamut, everything from getting them into the health system to filing for compensation and benefit type claims for injuries that they may have sustained while they were on active duty, in addition to education benefits, housing benefits, that type of stuff.
Okay. And I was doing a little reading before we met up this morning about your office and also about the committee that helps to work through issues that you're seeing or have become a priority in Douglas County. And you mentioned that housing is an issue for veterans in the area and that there's been work to address that. What is it that you're seeing as far as veterans who are seeing issues with homelessness in the area?
With homelessness, I think it's actually improving from what it was. I guess I kind of look at there's two types of homelessness. There's those that are homeless because of circumstances that are beyond their control and they don't want to be homeless. And then there's homeless as that's the lifestyle that they've chosen. For those that have chosen the lifestyle, there's not really much we can do unless they ask for assistance and want assistance. For those that do come into the office, then we have various things that we can do to help them get out of the homeless type issue, whether it's find them treatment for maybe they have mental health issues and such. So we can tie them up with one of the VA health systems that can help address that and get them treatment for that and then integrate them back into society and get them housed. We can use various federal programs such as the SSVF, which is I'm terrible with acronyms here. So
it's, me too.
So, anyways, it's a federal program, services for veterans and their families, and we also can use a program, a state program that used to be federally funded, but then the federal funding fell off, and the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs picked it up, and that's the VORP, the Veterans Outreach and Recovery Program. They also help with the veterans, getting them off the streets, into the homes, getting them treatment and such. So unfortunately for the treatment options and such, they have to go away from this area, which that in itself is difficult to, if someone's encountering difficulties, to uproot them from their families and their friends and their comfort zone and move them 2 to 3 hours away while they're going through these programs. And then come back.
Is that the closest area where they would be able to receive treatment?
For the VA type of treatment, yes, it is. We have a treatment facility in, I think the closest in Wisconsin would be the Chippewa facility, and the closest in Minneapolis would, or in Minnesota would probably be the Minneapolis VA Hospital or St. Cloud.
Has that been a real stress on the veterans that you serve? It sounded like you said it was getting better. So are you seeing a lot of veterans?
It is getting better as far as with the, for example, the VORP. They used to be home-based out of Hayward. And then when they revamped it and the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs took over the funding for it, which is a pilot program for 1 year, they worked with my office and it was decided that we would try to open up an office right in the Government Center building here in Douglas County, since Douglas County does have the larger veteran population in our northwestern region here. So they're now operating directly out of our office a few days out of the week. And he has the representative, I believe he covers an 8 or 10 county area up here in the Northwest. So he's quite busy. And the first day he was on the job, we happened to have a veteran come in and we handed him off right to him. So he's been busy working with veterans as they come in and such. So
I want to say I saw that there has been about a 15% increase in veterans utilizing that program here in the county, or
I guess I can't comment on what percentage increase because I haven't seen those statistics and I'm not sure where they're from. So
okay,
I just know that from us, we generally see someone coming into our office asking for assistance, probably anywhere from one a month to one every 2 months. It depends on the time of the year and such. So
okay. So how is that working as far as connecting people to services? I mean, you're talking about treatment services. Well, I guess what would you like to see to make that better or more accessible for veterans in our area?
Well, I guess it depends on what type of treatment you're speaking of. If it's mental health or whether it's drug, alcohol, abuse type of a thing, it's nothing that's really concentric to just veterans. I mean, this is a problem for the community as a whole, all the way across the United States. There's just not enough mental health inpatient treatment centers and drug and alcohol abuse centers. I don't care where you are in the United States. There's just not enough, whether you're a veteran or a non-veteran. If we're just speaking veteran-wise, like I say, for us, our biggest thing to jump over is if we're going to get them put in, they're going to have to be willing to travel 2.5 to 3 hours away. And a lot of times that's out of their comfort zone. So if we could get something locally here in the Twin Ports area, then that would greatly increase the availability of something. And if we have veterans going into, say, St. Luke's or any other of the civilian ones, that could also help free up beds for those locations if we had some place for the veterans. So okay. I personally would like to see something built in Douglas County and in Superior as a mental health inpatient.
For veterans or just for the community at wide?
Well, I'd like it for the community at wide, but specifically for veterans, since that's what I deal with is okay. Veterans.
Well, and you mentioned that they have to travel 2 to 3 hours away to receive that treatment.
That's inpatient treatment.
Inpatient
we do it.
Treatment.
Yes, we do have the Twin Ports Clinic here that has outpatient treatment. So.
Okay. Well, what kind of outpatient services are available to veterans in Douglas County?
Through the Twin Ports Clinic and also through the Vet Center up on the hill, they do mental health type counseling and such. So,
in those cases where transportation is an issue or a barrier for veterans, what do you do or what are you seeing with transportation right now in the county? How is that an issue?
Well, the transportation, I guess I clarify that. It's not really the transportation. If a veteran comes in and they're willing to go to Chippewa, we'll get them to Chippewa. So that's not really a transportation issue. The VORP coordinator, he'll actually make sure that they get there as long as with our office. We'll find whatever means is necessary to get them there. It's the getting them to say yes, because you can't force somebody to go to treatment. They have to go on their own. So that's the transportation, the distance issue.
Right.
For that. If you're talking about transportation issues alone, as it's been well known through the paper and whatnot, there's three basic veteran transportation systems operating out of the Twin Ports area here. Douglas County, van service has been operating, I've been told, for up to like 20, 30 years. So it's been around a while out of our office. In addition to that, there's the Disabled American Veterans Transportation Coordinators for both Wisconsin and Minnesota that are operating out of the Twin Ports Clinic. We have seen in my office a decrease in number of riders utilizing our service. And with the Minnesota coordinator entering in 2016 to the Twin Ports Outpatient Clinic, coordinating with the Wisconsin DAV coordinator, they have increased their capabilities there. So as far as transportation, I think they're pretty well served right now as to getting to the VA hospital system in Minneapolis.
Okay. Why do you think that participation has decreased, or what factors do you think are playing a role in that?
Well, I think it's a combination of factors. One factor is the veteran population is declining. Our older veterans, World War II veterans, are unfortunately they're dying. So they're requiring less and less. We have, I would say, the majority of our veterans are probably 62 years and up. We also have seen programs such as Veterans Choice and what's called fee basis being used more readily here in the Twin Ports area, allowing veterans to go seek private health when they cannot get to the Twin Ports Clinic, or if it's just not adequate for them to make that long journey down to the VA Medical Center, then they're being authorized to use our local services here. So that's a reduction in trips that you have to do. For Douglas counties, I think another problem with ours is that the VA has changed their policies, or maybe they've always been enforced or been there. They're just enforcing them now, in that for payment, they've changed their system from before when a veteran, when we transport a veteran down to the VA hospital, they would receive their pay voucher right there at the travel pay counter. They, in turn, would receive cash, which they would then turn over to our driver. We, for our service, we are a fee service. So we, right now, it's if a veteran is eligible for travel pay through the VA, then they're to turn over that travel pay that they're to receive from the VA. And it's roughly around $120 for a round trip that they should be receiving through the VA. The VA decided that they wanted everyone to go to direct deposit. So instead of that instant changeover from paying our services for our services, the monies then were supposed to go into the veteran's personal checking account, and then they in turn would write us a check for it when they received their payment. That was problematic because at the time they did this, there was a loss of personnel in the travel office at the VA hospital, so travel claims were being delayed. At some points, we were seeing them delayed as much as 3 months before veterans were getting their pay for the trip, which just delayed us receiving it. There was also a problem with sometimes veterans would get their funding, and since it went directly into their account, they decided, well, it's my money now, which unfortunately is fraud, because they're being paid for a service that they didn't, for funds that they didn't incur.
So there were instances where people either were seeing their claims not paid out immediately or they weren't paying the fees for the service.
That's correct.
Okay. Did that play a major role in your decision to discontinue the van service? Or?
Well, first of all, the service is not discontinued. It is still going. It was brought up in front of the board, the Health and Human Services Board, and they elected to table the decision until I believe it's October or November, while I gather more information for them to make a decision.
Okay. I'm sorry. I know you had recommended discontinuing the van service.
That is correct.
So what information are you going to be collecting to present to the board when they meet again?
Well, one of the things that they want, that they were concerned about, was our service, how it differs. There's a couple differences between our service and the DAV operating out of the Twin Ports Clinic. The Twin Ports Clinic service is absolutely free to the veterans. Okay, as long as they have a medical appointment at the VA hospital, they can sign up and ride for free. How that system works is DAV, from my understanding, actually the disabled American veterans will go out and they'll purchase a van. They then will turn the van over to the VA, and it becomes VA's property now. So it's the VA that's furnishing the transportation. So that's the reason why there's no transportation allowance afforded to any of the veterans, because it's the VA paying the bill for them to get there. With our service, we're not receiving any funds from the VA. It's all based off of, you know, Douglas County taxpayers paying for the fee. So I guess that being known, they wanted me to go back, and I guess another the thing I was leading to was that our service picks up the veteran if they live in the city right at their door. So it's a home pickup.
Yeah, super convenient.
And home delivery, correct. The DAV service, they have to get themselves to the Twin Ports Clinic. So one of the problems that they had was, what if a veteran couldn't get to the clinic to go on the DAV service? So I'm in the process of looking into just what we can use and what's available for those few that cannot actually get themselves to the clinic.
So, but was that stressing your budget then, the issue with the claims, whether they were delayed or not paid? Was that preventing you from providing the service, or was it mostly the decline in use of the service?
I would it's obviously stressing the budget. I mean, when you put in a budget, you extrapolate it out and figure that you're going to be receiving this much in travel pay back for it to help pay for the gas and the driver stipend and the maintenance of the vehicle. So that does have an effect. I won't say that had a major effect in why I recommended doing it. My major effect was in counting the number of passengers that we were delivering, it equated to about 3.5 passengers per week that we were transporting down for this year. And when I met with the DAV coordinators over at the Twin Ports Clinic, and I asked them, is this, if we were to discontinue our service, would you be able to withstand more veterans coming? And they responded yes, without a problem. One of the other issues I had was the DAV at that point in time did not take veterans down on Fridays. Our van didn't take veterans down on Tuesdays, so we had a five-day-a-week coverage. They could either use there or the. Since that time, the DAV has included five Fridays on their delivery to the cities as well. So one of the issues with that is they want to return by noon on Fridays because of the traffic conditions leaving from there to here. Drivers have to get up early in the morning, make the run, and traffic is horrendous right now coming back from the cities on a Friday afternoon.
In summer during construction season.
Correct.
Yeah.
So that's a safety issue that they're looking at. So we no longer had the issue where we didn't have a five-day service. But then we had the issue of, well, what if we had a patient that was there past noon? So I've been looking into things from that as far as, okay, how can we respond to those few cases where someone may have a specialty visit at the VMAC on a Friday afternoon, and that's the only time they can get that appointment. So it's that issue that I'm looking at to address. As well as there was an issue about, have I polled the veterans in the community and such, the veteran organizations and such. So those are the main issues. And then there was an issue on VA funding. What's VA funding going to look like in 2019? I believe their fiscal year is October to October. So that's why they tabled it until I believe it's November to see what the fiscal year budget is for them requiring on fee basis.
In case that might impact what you receive or the other services?
Right now, they're part of the thing is that veterans are being able to use the local services. And they were able to do that by funding that's put into this fee basis and Veterans Choice. So if Veterans Choice or fee basis were reduced greatly, then that could affect the number of ridership that now need veterans that needed to go to the VA hospital in Minneapolis since they could no longer use the local services. So they wanted to ensure that that funding issue is still viable so the veterans can still be utilizing the services that they're currently utilizing outside of the system now and that there's not some major change which would give us a major uptick in veteran transportation to the cities.
Okay. Well, is that the biggest issue that you're seeing right now in the county with transportation, or are there other issues that you're seeing related to that?
As far as large issues, you always have the small little issues. But for us, my biggest issue and why I recommended we stop the transportation for Douglas County is because right now it's a redundant service. It's a service that the DAV is handling well, and they are fully capable of handling the service. So our service, in my findings, is not necessary at this point in time. So that, and if that is not necessary, then why should we be spending taxpayer dollars on a redundant service that could be done free through the VA?
Well, aside from transportation, I also wanted to ask you about healthcare for veterans. I know you said that it hasn't been as big an issue here in the Twin Ports because we have the Twin Ports VA outpatient clinic.
Correct.
But what are the things that you're seeing with healthcare here for veterans in Douglas County? I mean, we just had a recent report that came out from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs that, you know, around 20 service members or guard members or active duty personnel die by suicide each year, and that's been a growing focal point related to healthcare for vets. But what are you seeing?
Well, for our area, that's kind of a national statistic type of a deal. We do have the unfortunately the occasional suicide that does occur in the Twin Ports. That falls back to the whole mental health issue. We don't have the mental health facilities available to handle the mental health problem, whether it's veteran or civilian. It's just not here. And what we do have here, it's not enough. There's too many people that are suffering from mental illness for the facilities that they have to treat them.
And does that include post-traumatic stress or?
Yes.
Okay. So is that an issue that you're seeing here in the community? I mean, what would you say is the biggest healthcare concern among veterans that you interact with?
Oh, there's such a wide variety of health concerns. And it depends on what category you're looking at of veterans. Post-traumatic stress, it is with our veterans here. I mean, people don't know it. You might look at somebody and they're fine, but they're really, you know, some of them are not. I mean, they do well as they're very stoic and they do that soldier, keep moving forward type of a thing. So you don't hear as much about it, but we do see everything from post-traumatic stress. We still have Agent Orange cases coming in from the Vietnam era. And then we see the Gulf War veterans that are starting to come in. So that's kind of like our next wave of veterans that I think is going to happen is the Gulf War veterans are going to be, they're going to be retiring. The military, they're going to, National Guard members, they're going to be retiring, and they're going to have a multitude of problems that they're still working with as far as the Gulf War and all the presumptives and just what the burn pit. I mean, the VA has a burn pit registry that we try to recommend the veterans signing on to because that helps the VA identify just what some of these problems are and associate the problems with where they were at and what they experienced.
Are you seeing veterans coming in associating problems with those burn pits in the Gulf War?
Yes.
How big an issue is that? I mean, are you seeing...
Well, it depends. If the veteran has a problem, it's a huge issue for them. So, and we handle those claims just like we do any other. We try to, as I tell veterans, I'm not there to get them money or get them what they want. I'm there to get them what they need. And my first goal is their health. You know, let's figure out what we can do. If you haven't been seen by the VA, let's try to get you into the VA clinic. Let's try to get you to the VA hospital and get things worked on. Find out just what the problem is. Get you diagnosed with something. And then we can look and see what type of claim we can put you in for if there is a claim to be sought.
And are you seeing issues with processing those claims, or do you feel like they're getting assistance in a timely fashion? Or
it is improving. I mean, I've been on the job for a little under 2.5 years, and the claims, they are improving, but you still have issues. They're trying to work on them. They went to a national queue system when we file a claim now. It used to go to a regional office. Like our regional office for our area was Milwaukee. So if we'd file a claim, we'd file it to the Milwaukee. Well, about a year or so ago, they switched to a national queue because some areas were so backed up that it was taking an ungodly amount of time to complete a claim. So it has improve with the national queue. There's, of course, whenever you make changes, there's issues and problems with what you do. So we see claims. I think the fastest claim we've ever seen go through took about three weeks total, and I've worked on claims that have still taken well over a year. So it depends on the complexity of the claim. It depends on how fast records are found and pulled. So there's all kinds of little intricacies that come into play when you file a claim.
Okay. Well, related to healthcare, you mentioned that skilled nursing is an issue right now with nursing homes or veterans care. What is it that you're seeing with that?
Probably the biggest thing that affects myself personally is when I get a veteran that comes in, and it's usually a veteran's family, and their elderly World War II or Korean War veteran father, or it's time to go into a nursing home. And veterans' homes they're fabulous for veterans. It's vets being with other vets. It's, if you've ever seen it, they all relate to each other. So it's a big difference between going to a veteran's home and going to a regular civilian, I'll call him, nursing facility. They're just one of the masses there where you get into a veteran's home, and if you've ever been in the military, wherever you went in the military, you always instantly became, it was your home. So everybody, you know, treated everybody fairly well and the camaraderie and such. When you get a veteran that comes in and they're looking for a place to place their father, and you have to tell them, well, the closest place I've got is Chippewa, and there's a waiting list for it. And then I tell them, well, if you want, Silver Bay is a little closer, but you have to become a Minnesota resident then to go there. With Wisconsin veteran homes through the WDVA, they do not have the requirement that you have to be a Wisconsin veteran, okay? But Wisconsin veterans take priorities. So Minnesota, from what I've seen, it is a requirement you have to be a Minnesota resident to actually be there. I'm not sure on their residency requirements, but that's it.
So how long are you seeing families here wait to find a place for their loved one to stay, even if it's hours away?
Well, they generally, I guess I don't have the statistics on how long, because once they leave our office, because we can't place them in anything, then they usually don't respond back to us and say, oh, yes, I've got my father now over in this facility. And a lot of times they go into the struggle of which facility do we pick to use. And, you know, most of the times people don't want to move their father or their mother or whoever out of the area that they are familiar with, away from family, because it's also difficult on the family that wants to come visit them. It's a lot easier to visit someone if they're 20, 30 minutes away than if they're 2.5 hours away.
Well, I know that there's been talk with the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs with possibly locating a facility on a border city between Wisconsin and Minnesota. Would that address that issue, or what are they talking or thinking about doing?
Well, I can't really talk about what the WDVA is thinking on doing. I know that I have addressed it with Secretary Zimmerman when I first met him here at the expo, and I know he has made statements to me that he hears the need for up here, but he's got the state of Wisconsin to deal with. So where the next one's actually going to be, you know, hopefully it is here. He knows that we have an issue here. We are a border state, and with Wisconsin, you've got St. Louis County veterans over there who could come over. So I don't think there's an issue on whether or not you'd fill the beds or not. I think it would be easily filled. So it's just what makes the most sense to the WDVA. I mean, I did propose a plan of a facility that covered all the bases, AODA, rehabilitation, skilled nursing, and mental health. But there was, I guess, too many roadblocks to a facility that handled all of your needs. So,
am I correct that you or your office has been working on a letter of support?
I am trying to address a letter of support that shows why Superior would be a good location for a skilled nursing facility.
Well, thanks, Brian. I really appreciate you taking time to talk to me.
Well, thank you, Danielle.
Again, you were just listening to Brian Erickson, Veterans Service Officer for Douglas County. A spokeswoman with the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs says they're not actively pursuing another veterans home at this time. The agency says it's still weighing the needs of the state's aging veteran population and talking with those who may be impacted by any decision to add a veterans home in Wisconsin. We're going to take a short break for these announcements, but when we come back, we'll speak with Tammy Javankowski, the president of the Wisconsin County Veterans Service Officers Association. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad you could be with us on this Friday. And this hour, we're talking about veterans and those working to connect them with services. Tammy Javankowski is president of the Wisconsin County Veterans Service Officers Association. She's also the Veterans Service Officer for Oneida County. She spoke with me by phone yesterday about her work and what they want to better serve veterans. I guess I'm just kind of looking for, first off, an overall view of what you're hearing and what you're seeing as you're working with other county veterans service officers across the state.
You want the good, the bad, or the ugly? Or kind of everything?
Yeah, I mean, just what are the strengths and what are the challenges of the work that you're doing with veterans right now across the state?
You know, across the state, it's better than it's literally ever been since Secretary Dan Zimmerman took the con, as I say, of the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs. We have the best relationship with the WDVA that we've had in decades. I've been doing this job for 12 and a half years, and it's certainly the best it's ever been. But we work together so well with them, serving veterans, taking care of veterans. And that makes our job so much easier. And it's obviously so much better for veterans when the state veteran service officers and the State Department of Veterans Affairs work together harmoniously.
Yeah, I'm sure that there's a lot of coordination that needs to take place between the Department of Veterans Affairs and the benefits and the services that you offer.
It does. And, you know, they are very open to listening to us. You know, they have come to us, which, again, is unusual. It didn't happen that way in the past. But they have come to us and said, what can we do to make life better for you? What can we do to make life better for veterans? You know, please give us your input. We want to hear what you have to say. You know, they know that for the most part, we're the ones that are boots on ground. They do have their outreach specialists in the WDVA, but, you know, we're the ones that really know our veterans the best because we're in the same county as them and we see them face to face. And so the WDVA wants our input on how, you know, things can get better for everybody.
So what are some of the recommendations then that you're making as to what could be done to improve the services that are offered to veterans across the state?
Well, one of the things that we have done is, and actually this was before I was president, Joe Olick, the Winnebago County Veterans Service Officer, was the president before me, and he formed this ad hoc committee for, and what the committee did was they made a recommendation on increasing the CVSO grant. Every year, CVSOs in the state, actually the counties get the grant on behalf of their CVSOs, But that grant has been the same amount of money for, I think it was since 1979. And so we formed an ad hoc committee, and then the association as a whole made a recommendation on how to increase the grant, or actually we requested that the grant be increased and gave them ideas on what it could be used for and, you know, just let them know that we could provide even more services to veterans with, you know, an increased grant from the state. We just wrote, I think it was a 3-page write-up and submitted it to Secretary Zimmerman on, you know, our justification for getting a grant increase. And, you know, he can't make any promises, of course. It's not his ultimate decision, but he certainly supports us and, you know, we'll be in our corner, for lack of better words.
Okay. Well, what are some of the things that these grants are used for then?
some of the things are to supplement salaries. Some of the CVSOs in the state have expressed to me that if they didn't get the grant, they wouldn't have their part-time receptionist or their assistant CVSO would only be part-time instead of full-time. So some of that money helps supplement incomes. Some of it is, you know, I mean, we've used it for a variety of things. It can be used for better computers, better equipment. It can be used for travel so people can go to training more often. There's just a variety of things that the grant can be used for.
Yeah, and I'm sure that staff are really important, too, in making those connections with veterans and providing them the services that they need.
You know, it's so true. In my office, there is my assistant veteran service officer and me. And the majority of veteran service offices in Wisconsin only have two employees. And for the most part, we can maintain our sanity and keep up with the veterans that we have appointments with and keep up with the walk-ins and keep up with the phone calls. But the problem for me has always been we can't reach out and go on home visits to the veterans who really need us, the elderly, the disabled, you know, the ones who can't drive for whatever reason. Those are the ones that almost need us more. But our counties are so big that, and not necessarily, you know, we don't all have, we don't all have 15,000 veterans in our county, but, you know, area-wise, they're big. So for me, example, to get in my car and go to the furthest point of my county to do a home visit could literally take me out of the office for at least a half a day. And that's not fair to my assistant CVSO if I'm always gone. And it's not fair to the walk-ins that come in. It's not fair to the phone calls. But it's not really fair to that veteran who's the furthest point away from me that I can't go do a home visit for him. So for me personally, that's where I'm torn is, you know, I'm not able to do the amount of home visits that I would love to do, and I really need to do because I'm only a two-person staff.
What are some of the primary reasons that you're going out to visit them or to connect with them on the phone? What is it that they need?
Like, for instance, if they're low income and they're looking for a way to increase their income, there's actually the VA offers a benefit called a non-service connected pension, and it is a benefit that wartime veterans are eligible for. Unfortunately, peacetime veterans are not. But wartime veterans may be eligible for it depending on their income. So if they're low income, under the income of this pension, we can file for this pension and bring their income up to the VA's pension limit, which is quite low. So if they're under that limit, they're very low income. The other thing is, we get a lot of calls for, you know, especially disabled and elderly people, you know, does the VA offer any home health care? Well, yes, they do, but you have to be in the VA healthcare system. So if they're not, then we want to get them into the VA healthcare system. So hopefully the VA can provide them some home health care.
Well, what are some of the challenges that you hear with families and veterans as far as healthcare needs, especially with aging veterans that we see?
Well, that is one of the biggest ones as far as aging veteran goes is getting help, you know, getting home health care. You know, back in the day when I was younger, I'm like, so you always got nursing homes. They can take care of you, you know? Well, then I got older and wiser and I got this job and I started going to nursing homes and visiting with veterans and spouses and survivors of veterans, and I started seeing nursing homes. And I'm not insulting nursing homes, but let's face it, no one wants to go to a nursing home. We want to stay in our home where we're familiar with, where we're comfortable with. But oftentimes they can't if they don't have some kind of home health care. And home health care is very expensive. So if the VA can help provide that for free, you know, that's a huge benefit to our veterans. The other thing is I notice if a veteran walks in our office, and I'll bet you every CVSO in the state will say the same thing. If a veteran walks in our office and says, I'm about to turn 65, we know they're going to ask, we know they're going to follow it up with a VA healthcare question. Because, you know, 65 is obviously when they go on Medicare and they have to make that determination. Do I want to pay for supplemental healthcare? you know, what will the VA help me with? So they're kind of looking at all their medical care options. So we get that question a lot from 65 and older, or people who are about to turn 65.
I guess I'm just wondering if there's any barriers for them to obtain home health care or any other services through health care if they're older. Like, maybe not because of their age, but because of where they're located. Is it difficult for veterans sometimes to access services?
It is more difficult if they're located. I think the magic number is 50 miles from the nearest VA medical hospital. But the VA can contract out. I know for people who are eligible, like in my area, we're, you know, over 50 miles from the VA medical, our VA medical center in Iron Mountain, Michigan. But we do have people that are eligible for home health care, and the VA contracts out. I have a gentleman on my street. He's a dear friend of mine, actually, because he's a World War II ex-POW. And he's a widower, and his only child passed away a few years ago. So he's kind of my special veteran that I keep an eye on. And the VA contracts Aspirus out to provide his home health care. So I do know that they do contract out, like I say, I think if it's more than 50 miles out. And I know that it takes a little longer to, you know, or at least it used to. I can't speak for nowadays, but it may take longer if the veteran is outside that 50-mile radius. I guess I don't want to say that every single veteran is eligible for home health care. I'm not in the VA healthcare system, so I don't know their exact criteria. But what we tell our veterans is the only way to get home health care or to see if you're eligible is to be in the VA healthcare system, because their primary care provider, which they will be assigned once they're in the healthcare system, will make a determination whether or not they're going to do a consult for home health care, you know, whether they meet the eligibility criteria. And then if they do, they'll do a consult for home health care.
Healthcare is a really big deal for veterans, you know, as you said, you know, whether it's their age or just, you know, if they're younger and they've sustained injuries as a result of their service. What else is a huge issue right now facing veterans in the work that you're doing?
For me personally, what I see, and again, I think a lot of people would agree with this, and I think the suicide numbers also would agree with this, is the lack of mental health care. Now, that's not, I don't feel that's the VA's fault, because I think a lack of mental health care, I think, is a nationwide problem. We just don't have enough health care providers to provide the services that veterans and non-veterans need, quite frankly. Getting service sometimes is very difficult. We had two providers here at the VA clinic in Rhinelander, and they're both gone now. So I believe they have a mental health care provider that comes down from the VA Medical Center in Iron Mountain, Michigan once a week. But otherwise, our veterans pretty much either go into the civilian sector or they do the telehealth. You know, they talk to a health care provider in another city on the TV, basically. Which some veterans don't mind, some veterans don't like, you know. But I just think we need more mental health care. We shouldn't have 20 or 22 or whatever the magic number is nowadays that they're using. We shouldn't have that many veteran suicides. You know, that's epidemic. And I think a lot of it is the lack of mental health care.
Again, you were just listening to Tammy Javankowski, president of the Wisconsin County Veterans Service Officers Association. We're going to take a short break for these announcements, but when we come back, we'll review news of the week. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio, and now it's time for a look back on the news of the week. Two lawsuits were filed recently against Husky Energy following an explosion at the company's oil refinery in April. A class action lawsuit was filed by Superior residents Jason Bruzek, Hope Copland, and Neil Miller. Their attorney Gordon Rudd alleges Husky was negligent in refinery operations. The three also claim the company interfered with their property rights and trespassed on their lands through lingering odors, noise, and soot. All three are seeking damages related to lost wages and evacuation expenses. And seven
contract workers filed a civil suit against Husky in Douglas County Circuit Court. They were working for Evergreen North America and Jamar Contractors when the explosion occurred. They claim a strange knocking noise caused workers to rush out of the refinery over fear for their safety. The workers say the explosion took place about 45 minutes after Husky employees told them to return to work. They also claim Husky was negligent and say the company failed to warn workers about dangers on site. The men say proper training, supervision, and safety equipment was lacking. The seven are seeking damages for medical costs and lost wages. A Husky Energy spokeswoman says they're cooperating with agencies investigating the incident, but declined to comment further. The company has paid out 95% of the roughly 4,000 claims it has received. The Minnesota Department of Commerce says energy firm Enbridge does not have adequate insurance to protect the public from damages related to crude oil spills. Critics fear that puts taxpayers on the hook to pay for cleanup of any pipeline accidents. The Minnesota Department of Commerce is reviewing Enbridge's policies to make sure the company is meeting conditions for building its Line 3 replacement project that runs to Superior. Peter Anderson with environmental group 350 Madison says the agency's findings show Enbridge doesn't have a policy that will protect the public. The company's coverage sparked legal challenges in Dane County after officials tried to impose special insurance on a pipeline project there. State lawmakers passed a provision in the last budget to prevent counties from doing so. An Enbridge spokeswoman said in a statement that it has $940 million in general liability insurance to cover any sudden spills. The company adds it's financially strong enough to pay for any cleanup, but critics fear that may not be the case down the line. The American Civil Liberties Union is asking Wisconsin municipalities to repeal panhandling ordinances the group says are unconstitutional. The ACLU of Wisconsin sent letters to 8 cities and villages with ordinances that ban begging on public property. ACLU attorney Karen Rotker says in 2015, the federal Supreme Court ruled that government can't restrict free speech, which includes asking people for money. She says panhandling ordinances are unconstitutional because they don't target charities asking for donations in public.
But if a person sat on the street and said, can you give me $2 to feed myself, that would have been a criminal violation or at least a municipal violation.
The city of Superior received a letter from the ACLU. Mayor Jim Payne says their ordinance shouldn't be on the books.
I don't fully know what the mayor and council at the time were trying to do when they passed it in the first place. But I know that poverty is a problem in the city of Superior, and we should take up meaningful efforts to reduce poverty. That does not mean banning it. You can't ban poverty. You can't ban homeless people. You have to actually take up large comprehensive actions that help people living in poverty by providing stability and providing opportunity.
Payne says the city needs to take a multifaceted approach to address poverty through housing, workforce development, and transportation. U.S. Highway 2 is open after June flooding washed out a segment of the road near Ino. Olivia Shalaby reports that's good news for residents of Bayfield County.
Diana Moss with the Wisconsin Department of Transportation says it costs roughly $2.2 million to repair the stretch of highway.
So we replaced it with a bridge due to the hydraulics in the area, the risk for future flooding, and it's also to accommodate trout stream.
She says they were already planning to build a bridge in 2019, but the flood damage moved up the project. Moss says U.S. Highway 2 is a major route for northern Wisconsin with roughly 4,200 people driving east to west each day. Mary Motif is the director of tourism in Bayfield County. She says the road damage didn't have much impact on tourists, but she says she's excited the highway will be open this fall.
Especially with some of our bigger, Apple Festival is one of our biggest festivals that happens here each year, Bayfield Apple Festival. And with that level of traffic that will be coming to the area all in, over the course of the weekend of Apple Festival, that is really important that that highway is open now for that.
Bayfield County detoured traffic on County Road G while repairs were being made to US 2. The county's highway commissioner, Paul Johannick, says 3 miles on the eastern side didn't hold up well due to increased traffic.
It was a little older section of road, so it didn't hold up to the amount of traffic that was on there. And we knew it would not fare well with that amount of traffic, but it was agreed upon beforehand that the state would do repairs and everything for them using G as a detour.
Except for County Road N, Johannick says road repairs are nearly completed. He expects work on flood-damaged roads to be finished by the end of this month. Olivia Shelby, Wisconsin Public Radio.
The Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission is forecasting another below-average year for wild rice in northern Wisconsin. Commission wildlife biologist Peter David says wild rice is doing well in Forest County and the crop doesn't look too bad in the Hayward area. But overall, he says the crop has been stressed due in part to heavy rains and high water levels.
You could have a good rice bed, but if these storms come through at the wrong time, you might get very little human harvest out of it at least.
David says northern Wisconsin lost a wild rice bed after June flooding took out the Radigan Flowage Dam in Douglas County. He says fungal outbreaks of brown spot disease on the crop seem to be happening more often with climate change. Wild rice, or manumen, is culturally significant to tribes like the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. Wild rice is used in all of the tribe's ceremonies and feasts. Tribal Council member Dylan Jennings says the plant has been less abundant than in years past.
Climate change has been, we feel, one of the big contributors for, you know, introduction of and the thriving of invasive species, other species that compete with manumen.
Jennings says it was a decent year on the reservation for wild rice last year. He says they're hoping for a good local harvest this season. And that's some of the news of the week, and that's it for our program. You can hear it again online on our website at wpr.org/superior. I'm Danielle Kading, and you've been listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. We hope to have you back with us again next Friday. Until then, have a great weekend.